had laid out were pretty enormous and seemed almost unattainable. And so I was like, this is information that people need to know about. And more importantly, this next generation of students needs to be presented this in a way that's not apocalyptic.
Hi, everybody. This is Lexi, and welcome back to Good Stories. For today's story, we are going to be talking about our world and the future of our world. Dun, dun, dun. We have Blake Blaze and Addie Klimek on. They are the founders of Our World, an online climate change education platform. Now, if you hear the words climate change and are immediately turned off, either because you think the subject is boring or because you feel helpless when thinking about what can we do to help our world, I encourage you to listen to this episode with an open mind. It wasn't too long ago, before So Good, that I was in your shoes when I thought about the topic of sustainability, but that's exactly what Blake and Addie are trying to accomplish, and what we're trying to do at So Good is to make sustainability approachable and something hopeful, not hopeless. There's something that all of us can do, and that's what I took away from today's episode. Hi, Blake. Welcome to Good Stories.
Good morning, Lexi. Thank you for having me.
So we met through a mutual friend this past summer on July 4th. You weren't there, so you were at home working, but I met all four of your other brothers. And yes, you heard that right. Blake is a part of five brothers. God bless your mother. She's an incredibly patient person. But yeah, your parents told me about your story, and so did your brothers, and I hadn't even met you, but I felt like I already knew a lot about you. Tell the people what you do.
Sure thing. So for the past, now over 2 years, have been working on a startup called Our World, or World, that focuses on climate education for kids. And the original inspiration was just realizing kind of how dire the outlook is when it comes to global warming and converting people to sustainable habits. And as I saw it, there was really no way for young people to interact with that cause, and wanted to try and spread the word in a way that was accessible and not too intimidating for the next generation.
And that is in line with So Good. Sustainability was really intimidating before. We found ways through So Good by making it really approachable. And that's how we want it to be for our consumers and our listeners. How can we make a positive impact on our environment without needing to sell all your stuff and move to a hut on an isolated region of the earth?
It's got to be inclusive, because I think a lot of people are turned off by either feeling like they can't meet the expectations of their peers or of what it's going to take to reach these goals. But I love getting to know So Good. And food waste is a huge problem when it comes to even like personal carbon footprints.
So why don't we go back a little bit in your story? I'm also so excited to talk to your co-founder, Addie, but let's backtrack with you.
Sure.
So growing up, you are the oldest of five siblings, mm-hmm. and they're all boys. And does everyone refer to you guys as the Blaze Boys?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, that started to stick. We all had the same teachers and coaches growing up, so it's easy to refer to us as a collective.
That's hilarious. The Blaze Boys, that has such a nice ring to it. Growing up as the eldest of five brothers, what was that like? From the two times I've met them, the brothers aren't chill people. They seem like they caused some trouble growing up.
There are definitely some troublemakers among us, and obviously that multiplies when we're all together. But mine was truly the best. When I was 3 years old, I already had two younger brothers. And when I was nine, the family was complete. So we were always a pretty big and pretty close unit. And my parents made it pretty clear that like my role as the oldest was to like look after everybody and set a good example. So from really early on, like my identity was kind of built around taking care of this group and having our little, you know, little team.
You just seem like a very disciplined person, like I said, when literally July 4th. Every single one of your brothers and both parents were there except for you, and you were working. It takes discipline and self-control. Do you feel like being the eldest brother shaped you to be that way?
Definitely. I mean, my parents made it clear that I was to set an example. And part of what drove me was I was really competitive and just didn't want any of my younger brothers to beat me in anything that I did. And that's like kind of carried over and wanted to continue to find success in what I do and working hard.
You were the captain of your football and basketball teams, right?
I was. In my senior year, I was captain of football, basketball, and tennis team, which was fun because two of my brothers were on that team. Yeah.
Taking on that leadership role, is that something that you enjoy being, or it's just a natural fit for you to take on leadership roles?
Yeah, I'd like to think that's a natural fit, but I still have to work hard at it and know that I have some drawbacks and some weaknesses. But as a result of being Yells to Five, being comfortable playing team sports, and I really think just being conditioned by the kind of affirmation of my family, feel comfortable stepping into leadership roles.
Until you eventually become a founder.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
So I think the natural progression from team sports growing up was to be compelled to join the Navy. So I saw there like another opportunity to join a big team and work toward the shared goal. Spent 4 years working as a cryptological warfare officer, learned a lot.
What is a cryptological warfare officer? I've had to look up many definitions, but why don't you tell the listeners?
Sure, without making their eyes glaze over. Cryptologic warfare encompasses signals intelligence. So think of like intercepting messages. Electronic warfare, which is kind of like mostly the realm of radar and using the electromagnetic spectrum to carry out acts of war. And then also cyber warfare, so both offensive and defensive cyber.
Is it as cool as it sounds?
No, not nearly as cool as it sounds.
No, not at all.
I guess you kind of alluded to really compelled by the aspect of joining a group that had a shared mission. And at the time, about the 2013-2014 time period when I was getting ready to graduate, it was about the time that ISIS was rising to prominence. And when I looked around, I majored in math and economics and kind of always thought that I was going to go into finance. When I looked around and saw like what the biggest problem was, it's, at least to me, it seemed like it was the existential threat of radical terrorists attacking the U.S. And so it's like, what can I do? I knew that I had something of an aptitude for leadership and liked working in teams, so I wanted to join the Navy. I continue to serve on the weekends and then 2 weeks a year, just hoping to stay involved in case anything goes really wrong.
What does that involve? Being, you said on the weekends you help? Is that every weekend?
So 1 weekend a month and basically 2 weeks a year, I'll put my uniform back on and go to work. I've been drilling out of Fort Meade since I left active duty service in October of 2020. To your question about the timeline for joining the Navy, I spent a year teaching high school math after graduation while I worked on my application package to join the Navy as a SEAL candidate. So then actually joined the Navy in getting commissioned June of 2016 into basic underwater demolition SEAL training class 321 in July of 2016, and then rang out during Hell Week because I just wasn't prepared mentally or physically. And then got redesignated to the complete opposite end of the spectrum of service in the Navy for cryptologic warfare. Went from being a kind of a jock to a computer nerd.
So you went into, your goal from the beginning was to become a Navy SEAL.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was during Hell Week, which I can't even imagine. I feel like hell doesn't even describe it. After that, what was your mental state when you... I guess your world must have kind of flipped because you had a goal mm-hmm. and you had an idea. And it seems like growing up, you were the oldest, you were competitive, and it seems like anything you went after, you usually got. What was it like at that point for you?
It was definitely tough. There were a couple of failures that I had in college that I thought, were significant failures, but nothing compared to that for sure. And it took kind of realizing that it was the harshest critic I had in my life was myself. And so I was initially just really embarrassed, that my family, was going to be disappointed that I hadn't made it, or friends were going to be disappointed. And it took the realization that you're going to find success when you're meeting your internal standards and your own goals for yourself. I think achievement often gets confused for success where achievement is just like attaining external validation. So it took some, definitely took some meditation, had to like focus on wellness for the first time. Because up to that point, yeah. I had played football, had tried to be just kind of the conventional version of tough, which meant like never admitting that you had any weaknesses. And so definitely took some time. Went and saw a therapist for a couple months afterwards to kind of get reoriented and recalibrate. So that was definitely a low point from September of 2016 to probably February of 2017.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's something that so many people can relate to, and that's something I can relate to. There's definitely high standards in my family, but the highest standards I have are the ones that I put on myself. It's at that height of pressure, self-imposed pressure, where you kind of break yourself. No one ever really breaks you. It's you break yourself. But then when you build yourself back up, you come back even stronger, and you came back even stronger.
Definitely came back wiser. I don't know about stronger, but definitely wiser. Yeah. And the better for it. A friend of mine is always encouraging me not to regret past failures, because it's all about like our own journey on trying to find and discover like self-knowledge.
So at what point after you take time to really gather yourself, what did you view your future as after that process?
I was pretty focused on the short term and knew that I wanted to honor my obligation to the Navy, because I'd signed a contract that I would serve, you know, four years active duty at least. And there are some other people who don't make it through BUDS who like decide that the Navy's not for them. But I was really focused on honoring that commitment. And so just kind of wanted to be the best at whatever the Navy was going to tell me to do for the next 4 years.
What was the spark of Our World?
In the background, just recognizing in part through this like focus on wellness, was realizing that like what really inspired me was being connected to other people. It was, from my earliest days, having four younger brothers and feeling connections to them. It was being on my high school basketball team and feeling connected to my teammates. It was being in the Navy and feeling connected to other people who, you know, wore a uniform and had a shared mission. So that's kind of like all brewing in the background. And then one night I was working a night shift on the cyber operations watch floor. It was a quiet night, kind of had just like myself and my thoughts, and came across an article that highlighted exactly what we would need to do to meet some of the goals that the UN was laying out in order to prevent the global average temperature from reaching 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And the asks that they had laid out were pretty enormous and seemed almost unattainable. And so I was like, this is information that people need to know about. And more importantly, this next generation of students needs to be presented this in a way that's not apocalyptic, because fire and brimstone like is never gonna inspire people appropriately, at least. And so I was like, what could I do to help get this message out to students? And I was like, I'm gonna write a children's book, and it's gonna be about planting trees, and it's gonna have a message about being connected. And so I actually worked with a couple of high school teachers to write a children's book, and realized that I'm not the second coming of Dr. Seuss, and that if we were going to reach a wider audience, the product probably needed to evolve a little bit more. And that was actually right about the time that I met Addie. I'd spent kind of 6 months prototyping a website, and then met her through the University of Virginia. And having her on board kind of changed the game and allowed us to think a little bit more broadly about creating an academy where students could be rewarded for completing lessons with like real tangible things. In this case, planting trees so they could see the positive effects of their learning.
Have you always enjoyed nature and the environment? Were those always things that were passions of yours?
Totally. I definitely took it for granted. Growing up on Cape Cod, it was kind of a consistent theme in the programming for our science classes, was looking at the trips to the beach, learning about marine biology. And so it was always very present. Like, seeing the natural world, one of my favorite things to do growing up was to go whale watching. I forget if it was third or fourth grade, we went on a class field trip, and seeing humpback whales, just absolutely magical animals that have like very clearly an intelligence that we don't fully understand, was just kind of this inspiration that there is so much more to the connections that we have with one another and obviously with the natural world. And then there's kind of like the relevant to global warming. There's the fact that like the highest point on the Cape is something like 60 feet above sea level. So rising ocean levels pose a bit of a threat to our hometown.
So it's not all selfless, everybody. When you were thinking of starting Our World, were you scared? Were you intimidated?
I was far too naive to be intimidated. I was just, after 4 years in the Navy, which I love, I love my time. It's a huge bureaucracy. And so the opportunity to like take something that I really believed in and have the freedom to like really exercise what I thought my full talents were in pursuit of that was something that just excited me. And I was very lucky to have family members who supported, to have a partner who was okay with me leaving a stable paycheck and career behind to begin working on something that I like really felt could make a difference.
Hi, Addie. Welcome to Good Stories.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for coming on. Where are you right now?
I am in Charlottesville, Virginia at UVA.
So you are a student.
Yes, I am getting my master's right now in environmental science.
What are your first memories that you have of that initial spark for your love of nature?
Yeah, I think that that's actually like pretty clear, easy to think of. So like the Cleveland Metro Parks in the like suburb of Cleveland where I grew up, there was like the Chagrin River and a bunch of metro parks along that river. And so for as long as I can remember, like my earliest memories of being in nature was just going there with my dad and brother with like buckets and nets. And my brother and I would just like jump in the river in all these little ponds and like catch things and put them back and like look under rocks and just like explore the metro park like as our playground basically. And that was like really my clearest first memory of being in nature. It was just like getting our shoes stuck in the mud on the bottom of the pond and like just getting super messy and just like exploring that with my dad and brother. That was definitely kind of the first spark of that. I just love to be outside, love to find like new things and animals and look at everything that was there.
While you were in high school, you founded REACH. Mm-hmm. Why don't you share what that is? Because I think it's so awesome.
Yeah, so junior year of high school, my best friend and I created a nonprofit, which started out just as like a club, an independent, just like unaffiliated program. But it was called REACH, which stands for Reaching Environmental Awareness and Cultural Harmony. And the mission of the program was to basically bring middle school girls from our school and middle school girls who were recently resettled refugees in the United States together outside once a month to just like experience, have positive experiences in nature, kind of build like cross-cultural friendships. Since these girls were like, had just moved to Cleveland maybe a few months ago. And also kind of spread that kind of environmental awareness, environmental education, talking about, you know, sustainability issues or climate change in general, and what we could do to help. So kind of like all encompassing, there was like just the nature part of it, the environmental education part, and then just like bringing the girls together outside to facilitate, you know, new connections, sharing perspectives. I think the girls from our middle school learned so much from it and like really took away a lot. And that was mostly from meeting the refugee girls, not like the environmental kind of science part of it. So that was really, really a meaningful experience in high school because it was kind of really difficult to get up and running. Because my friend and I that started it, we were 16 at the time. And so we would go to teachers and be like, we want to do this. And they would be like, that seems like kind of a big project. And we just got told no.
You met some resistance there. And so you just said, okay, well, I'll do this on my own then. with your friends?
Yeah, no, we kind of like independently found the refugee placement agency and independently like fundraised my homeroom kind of teacher for 4 years, who was also our English teacher, like would come to the program days so that there would be an adult there. And yeah, we did find like some very good mentors and very helpful people eventually. It was just starting out, the first few teachers that we went to were basically like, this seems like too big of a project. Like, I don't think this is realistic for you guys. Maybe next year.
Do your homework.
Yeah.
No, you have a paper due on Thursday.
Focus on college. Like, you guys have enough going on. You don't need to do this.
I didn't know that Cleveland had such a high population of refugees. So how did you become aware of the refugee population in Cleveland?
That is an interesting question, because I'm not sure if I was really aware of how large of a population that was until we started this program and connected with that community more. We just had kind of a family friend who worked at Us Together, the refugee agency, over the course of creating this program, would like go in and meet with her frequently and hear a lot about like all of the issues they were having and their biggest needs. So November, December, so many families get off the plane and like have flip-flops or sandals on and like don't have socks or any warm shoes or anything like that. We did like a hat, glove, coat, winter coat drive at our school and just like tried to kind of support that community in any way we could. It took probably 6 months to get this project up and running. So like during those 6 months, we were really trying to build connections with Us Together and with the girls that we were meeting. So yeah, I'm not sure if I was like really aware of that until, and I was 16, I remember thinking like, wow, I really hadn't thought about the fact that there were refugees in Cleveland. And, you know, they probably have not been to any of the might not even know the Metro Parks exist, and also like might not have had the most positive experiences in their environment where they're originally from. A few of the girls had been living in a refugee camp for like the previous 2 years, and so when we were like talking about environment, that means something very, very different to them, and we really just wanted to like help make them feel a little bit more comfortable in Cleveland if possible.
Being able to broaden your horizons and be really welcoming to your community. There could be people who are your neighbors that you don't even know, and you don't know their struggles. And I think you branching out and bridging the gap between your refugee community members and your friends and other middle school girls, I think that's so powerful and special. The refugees that you met, was there a language barrier? Was there like a trauma barrier? What was the state of refugees? I'm sure there was such a variety of experiences, but what were those cultural and language barriers that you faced?
Yeah, so there were definitely a good amount of barriers that we some that we kind of prepared for and some that we had to adjust as we go. So the biggest, one of the biggest ones I remember, the program started in January. So we spent the fall planning it and getting everything ready. And then we had these 10 refugee girls and we had like met their parents, had like kind of gotten all that squared away and told them like, we're doing this outdoor, like, environmental education, we're going to be outside, we're going to go on a hike, and like bring warm clothes. And when they came, they had like ballet flat, but we were doing a walk and it was like muddy and snowy. And some of the girls were like carrying each other over the mud. Like the girls from my school who had like heavy snow boots on would literally like hit, like ferry some of the other girls across. And that was just so cool to see, because it was literally the first program day. Everyone was like nervous and new. No one knew each other like across the group. The environmental science part of it was like the biggest issue with the language barrier, because you know, you're trying to talk about climate change or sustainability. Those are pretty hard concepts to grasp in a second language, especially if it's like a relatively new second language. So we kind of switched to doing more like art-based activities. So we would be talking about environment, and we would have all the girls like draw a picture of like what they want their environment to look like. We would do like scavenger hunts of things outside in the woods, and the girls would like run around the woods with their phones taking pictures of stuff, rather than doing like a more heavily like science-based discussion of what we were learning about. We would try to make it like fun and interactive, and also accessible to everybody.
I think that you really promoting positive experiences with your community and other girls your age and other younger girls to have really positive experiences with their environment. I think that's so much more powerful. Helping people fall in love at a young age with nature, the environment, just being outdoors is so much more powerful than using doom and gloom tactics when we're adults. It's difficult now to make changes, but when you can start those changes when you're young and naturally and organically inspire that love for the earth that we live in, I think that's the beginning of a really powerful change and shift in the narrative that we have now.
One of our kind of core values, I think, is so much of what everyone is hearing about climate change right now, like in the news, is really just like doomsday. We have until 2050 to reach like net zero carbon emissions and all this stuff.
Your great grandchildren are going to die.
Like, young students who are seeing that, they can't do anything about that. They do not have decision making power. So instead of framing climate change through that, through like, we need to do this, this is what's going to happen if we don't, and this is, we only have this many years to do it, that's kind of like our whole curriculum is designed based on solutions first. So students learn about climate change and like some of these scientific concepts while they're learning about like different kinds of renewable energy, rather than kind of from the opposite way, like this is really, really bad, so we need renewable energy. It's more like, this is a really cool technology that allows us to get electricity from the sun. And just like having a much more positive message, because the fear tactics kind of thing, it can really just like turn people off or overwhelm you if you're reading that and you're like, okay, well, I can't do anything about that. Like, this problem is way too big for me to solve. So like, why bother? That kind of sets us apart a little bit. I think we are really trying to frame it as like an opportunity for change.
I think you've segued perfectly into what you and Blake are doing at Our World. So let's bring Blake back on. So we have the two co-founders in the house. Blake, what was your impression of Addie and why you thought that she would be a valued addition to the team?
This might sound corny, but like from the moment that Skipper introduced us, I was like, this is too good to be true, that someone, that like this person is as passionate as they are about this cause and as like clearly intelligent and motivated and wants to work on like this idea together. It was like, you couldn't be better. So that was the initial impression. And then the kind of continuing one is that Addie has like a great ability to take things that I'm like thinking about and maybe like simplify them or be like, this is what's actually important or what we need to do.
Addie, going back to your determination and drive, how are you balancing work and school? And was this when you were still in undergrad or while you're still getting your master's?
Yes, so we connected the summer before my second year or sophomore year of undergrad. And so this is my fourth year of school now.
Oh, so you joined as an undergrad. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, sophomore year. That is impressive.
Afterwards, one of the like head of the program that is like really close with all the students basically came up to us and was like, Addie, this is Blake. He wants to do climate change education. Blake, this is Addie. She wants to do climate change education. And then essentially just like started working on it from there. And it's come a long way since then. When we started out, we were just really kind of Blake had the book My Tree and Me, and a lot of the like kind of company like content, but in terms of like the climate change curriculum, we were kind of starting from scratch, just like jumping in, all right, let's get to it, and like what can we do here. And it's such a long way since then.
Let's talk about the future of our world.
We're working to build off of some of the momentum we had in the fall, where we did pilot programs with local schools to get feedback from students and teachers about how appropriate our lessons are, both in terms of content and experience. And we're really excited on rounding off a couple of features on the website. And then we are working on developing a couple of different profile metrics to help users track their own sustainable practices. And again, just trying to deliver a message of it being fun, inclusive, and maybe even like a small bit of competitiveness to encourage people to like want to be more sustainable than their friends.
I love that.
The dream is that we have a global community of learners who are proposing their own solutions to, you know, kind of local climate change challenges, that these learners can build off each other's successes. So you've got people who complete lessons or certified Our World. Problem solvers can propose lessons, receive support from the community, both monetarily in terms of feedback, and just kind of really develop this sense of connectedness the world over.
Addie, what do you envision for the future of Our World?
Kind of creating an international, like universally accessible climate education platform. We had a few students like who were taking our lessons and had them translated into Arabic. We have like our beginner lessons right now. I think also just really building out the functionality of our platform as a tool for students, supporting that in whatever way we can.
Blake, I liked how you phrased it earlier, is right now there's a very apocalyptic narrative when it comes to the state of our environment. Fear tactics are really good for creating shock value and an immediate reaction and response, but it's not good for lifelong sustainable changes. And that's really what we need, is to make a strong investment in actions that we take that are going to positively impact our environment, that everyone can take one small step. And that's how we are really going to build sustainable changes that'll last through our life and through future generations. So I really love what you guys are doing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun to be able to share a little bit of time with other people who are similarly motivated.
This is how I end with every interview. I wish I had time to send you guys smoothies, but unfortunately I will have to drink two extras, I guess, for you guys. But I love to end on a toast and a really positive and forward-thinking message. So what are the lessons that you have learned so far in your journey and with Our World's development that you want to impart on our listeners on how they can sow goodness in their lives and in our world?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's just so many people out there who like really care about this in the same way that we do. And it's really inspiring to know that kind of everyone is working on this together, and you meet some really cool people along the way too.
Yeah, I'd say along those lines, ask for help. People are willing to help, and teams get a lot more done than individuals.
Addie, what does your mug say?
Leave it better than you found it.
Oh, I love that. And Blake is drinking an Our World water bottle, and I am drinking our Godmother smoothie. So everybody, thank you so much for your time. I'm really glad that I got to talk to you guys and hear about what you're doing for Our World. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, Lexi.